Okay. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. You guys have so many categories, lots of stuff going on. For people that have a site that, you know, really is a little bit more of a store kind of site, what do you recommend for layout on their pages, or what's some of the best practices that you found to work?
Keeping it simple is a straightforward point to start with. And that's something that we're challenged by. You know, we've got 20 categories, and it's overwhelming, the thousands and thousands of pages that we have, and how do you get that and find that on our website? And it's overwhelming to us, and that's a battle that we constantly have. But one thing when we're designing a web page, and sometimes we get away from that, what's the one thing we want somebody to do on that web page?
Mm-hmm.
And make sure that we make that really obvious, because there are so many options on the internet, and if what I'm looking for isn't really obvious on the web page, I'm going to go find someplace else. So looking at what is the number one thing that you want to be in alignment with your customer on that page and get them closer. We've kind of found that it's better to have fewer options that get them closer to what they want than to give them, 50 options and they have to discover which one. It's much better to give them, three or four options of which direction to go, and on the next page there's three or four options, and on the next page there's three or four options. We found that to be way better for someone than someone who would just come along and say, okay, here's the 30 options that are available to you.
Are you using any sort of off-the-shelf tools to figure out where people are heading on your site, or what they click on, or what their behavior is?
We have some processes that we've built in internally. We use multivariate testing for just about any change that we make on the website, just to be able to monitor how many conversions do we get. We can segment by the traffic source. We can segment a subsection of a traffic source. So commonly we would do a section of new visitors that are arriving from search that have never been here before, for a key term other than fat wallet. So we're just looking at virgin users that are just arriving, and what is the impression that they get, to be able to compare before we throw it at our existing user base. So we'll test in small segments of users before we flesh it out. And the tools that we use to measure, how many new accounts did we get, how many transactions did we get, what are the commissions, things like that, we're able to track that in that test. As far as actually measuring the user behavior, we've built in some of our own methodologies to be able to track which link within a page that somebody clicks on. But I tell you what, I love Newegg, or Crazy Egg.
Yeah, Crazy Egg. Yeah.
Crazy Egg. For the money that you spend with those guys, the realizations that you can have are just fantastic. And I think one of the things that you can miss if you're just looking at your like a Google Analytics or some other analytics software, it only looks where people have gone on your website. What it doesn't necessarily tell you is where people wanted to go, and Crazy Egg can give that for you. We actually had a situation, we were analyzing a page, and we had no idea that people were clicking on one section of the web page, and we're like, why the heck are they clicking there? And we figured out what was going on and why they wanted to do that, and we made it easier for them. And it turned out that, one simple change that we made on the website turned out to be, mid six figures as far as the impact that it had on the revenue for the company over the course of the next year.
Wow.
It's just being able to leverage some small thing that you would have never seen unless you're really looking at what the consumer behavior is.
And by the way, the Crazy Egg, the founder of that, Neil Patel, is going to be at Underground.
I don't know if fantastic.
You can do that. Yeah, that'll be very cool. All right, let's talk about you have 1.2 million registered users. Do they get emails every day? What's your email strategy to those people?
Email's been something that's been not priority for us, and I know there's a couple things that other affiliates do and other websites do where they're really heavy on the email, or they're really heavy on the search engine marketing and paid links, and those have been areas that we haven't really focused on. We've primarily focused on the website experience of someone being able to come along and do some bargain hunting specific to where they're at right now. Are they just looking to see what bargains are out there? We've got general, you know, a daily email that goes out, but the sheer volume of information that we have is overwhelming when it gets tried to be, when we try to present it via an email. So we do topic alerts, like if somebody wants, let me know when something gets posted about laptop. That we can do something well with, but it would be, I mean, Google's at a whole different scale, but imagine getting an email from Google on a daily basis with all the changes and updates. You know, it's you know, if
yeah,
there
be,
you know, the
200
hot deal topics and 100 free stuff topics, and you know, you just can't keep up with that. So that's one of the things where we just look for ways of making the information more accessible. And when someone has an idea, okay, I'm looking for laptops, we want to be able to present that information to them in the best way possible. Or I'm going to go place an order at Widget Store. What are the special offers and the discounts? We want to make that information available to them.
Okay, very good. And then what's...
At any point of this discussion, are we going to talk about your Baja navigational skills?
I think we should probably talk about that when we get into the more fun aspect of of our talk.
Are you afraid that I'm, are you afraid that I'm turning the tables on this interview?
No, I'm never afraid of that. that'll be a good one. I'm sure everyone would love to hear your side of the story.
Uh huh. And when you say my side of the story, you mean what really happened?
The truth.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about you know, something that I don't think we've really talked about in any other interview since you have a quote unquote real company, which is 40 people. You've done a great job of building company culture. I mean, on the trips we've talked about some of the things here and there, and you know, we haven't really dug into it. And give me just some, I guess maybe the progression of how you got up to 40, or maybe some of the key hires originally, and then this idea of company culture and what that means to you and what you've done with it.
Right. Well, today I think we're at 57 employees.
Oh,
so
that's awesome.
We've continued to grow. And we really started figuring out, we've always had kind of a quirky culture since the day the company started. And you know, when we started Fatwall at the website, it was me rolling out of bed, working on it a little bit in the morning, and, you know, working on it at night as a hobby. What I consider now is, you know, it's the same thing. It's, you know, instead of being in the spare bedroom or in the basement, it's still that same room in my house, but it's now 30,000 square feet and it's not in my house. It's the same type of feel, and that was kind of the essence. We've all had jobs that sucked, you know, and when I became an employer and I started hiring people to help us out, I wanted to treat people in such a way where they don't have that feeling of, well, work sucks. We want them to be involved in the effort of and believe in the cause of what we're doing. It's not just I'm doing this for a job, but we're doing this to help people save money, or we're doing this to help people be better consumers. It's not just a programming job. It's not just a customer service job, but it's getting people to understand why we do the things we do. And just that basic premise is a starting point to setting that company culture so that there's an alignment. So if that doesn't resonate for somebody, they're going to have a hard time dealing with why do we care about this customer? A couple of years ago, shortly after we got involved with Vern Harnish's Gazelle's group, we went down the path of defining what our company core values are. And there was an interesting exercise that we did, which what I believe Vern calls it the Martian exercise. And essentially, if you were to take people from your company and you were going to put them in a spaceship to send to Mars so that they were going to demonstrate the things that make our company unique and make us different, you know, who would you send and why would you send them, and what would the Martians see and observe these people doing? So it was like, you know, this is an example of somebody in the company or a situation in the company that really resonates for us. You know, so as we were doing that, we were coming up with different thoughts as what our company core values were. And we came up with words like commitment, integrity, change, balance. We ended up adding respect. We ended up adding fun. And now I'm blanking out. So we've got balance, integrity, passion, fun, respect, commitment, and change. So we've got seven. And initially we had five. We didn't have respect or fun. Fun was just kind of one that we forgot about because it's been so ingrained in our company since we first had our office, or even before the office, when we had remote employees, the things that we would do when we did get together. The company culture, boy, when you first start out and you have a couple people and you know these people really well, you don't even have to articulate the company culture because everybody sees it and they know what it is. But as you grow,
yeah,
it's really important that that culture and what's important to you is defined. We had a couple instances, interestingly, as we had defined what these core values were, and we had an employee situation where they had submitted a false time card, and we gave them the opportunity to fix what's going on, and we had all the records that showed that no, they didn't do what they said they did, and we gave them an opportunity to fix the mistake of what they had, and they didn't choose that option, and they were choosing to go down the route of not showing integrity. And my simple statement was, we have a choice. If we're going to keep this person on board, we need to go rip that banner down that says integrity, because that's not what we stand for. And I'll say right now that integrity banner is still hanging above our cafeteria. And that's using, recognizing what's important to us. When it comes to something like, respect, one of the stories that we have there was we had an employee that was off one day, and he was on a field trip with his son. I'll get back to this story in a second, but this field trip with his son relates to a policy that we actually have written. It's called a never miss policy. And that means that you can never use work. You can never use your job at Fat Wallet as an excuse to miss something in your family. You can't use work as an excuse to say, oh, I can't go to this graduation because I've got to work. I can't go to this family event because I've got to work. You can't do that. Now, the policy even says, if you want to use work as an excuse, go ahead. But the reality is we don't want to stand in the way of someone doing what's right for their family. We recognize that while we believe and we're passionate about the work that we do, there's other more important things, and that our work supports the really important stuff. So back to our story, we've got an employee that is out of town. He's an hour and a half on a bus trip for a field trip with his son, and he gets a phone call from a wife of a friend in another state that says, this guy's been, your friend's been in a major accident. We don't know what's going on, but I needed you to know. And here he is. He's been on a school bus away from home, doesn't have a car, wants to get to his friend. And he calls, and he was flustered. He didn't know what he should be doing next. And I said, okay, your son's going to be fine. You can send him back on the school bus. We'll make sure, your family can be there to meet him on the school bus coming back. I said, you've got your company card. Hop in a cab, go to the airport, get on the next flight, go do what you need to do. These are the things that it just was doing the right thing for what that employee needed right then. And that story will never be forgotten, not by that person, of how we helped him out in a time of need. And, we've got stories like this for every one of our core values, recognizing those important things that you do. you know, so it cost us a little bit for a taxi cab and a flight, but
right.
we took care of what he needed right then when it was important.
I got actually two questions on that, and this has really been fascinating to me because I've been online for almost over 10 years now, and it hasn't been until recently where I really started thinking about values, and it's all kind of, I guess, sort of osmosis, like, mm-hmm. has happened, but really starting to get it down right now. And originally I thought it was all complete bullshit,
mm-hmm.
and companies that had mission statements and values and all that were, I don't know, like Enron-esque.
Well, and quite often they are just crap.
Yeah. And, you know, you guys actually lived them. And when did you start realizing that it actually was important when you started hiring more employees and it was beyond just a handful of people, that it could really be an osmosis-like thing?
Well, you had mentioned earlier in the call that I go to a number of conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And at one time I had gone to a conference called a Fast Company conference. It was done by Fast Company magazine. I think it was called Fast Company Real Time. And it was just a collection of authors and big thinkers from all different types of categories. It's like the magazine. It's just all
yep.
all different from all walks of life. And I thought, wow, what an amazing event. And the one event that I went to was the very last one that they ever did. And I just had gone to this one, and I felt it was something missing. And I was flipping through the Fortune Small Business magazine, it was the magazine put out by American Express, and it had an advertisement for the Gazelles Growth Summit. And I'm like, what the heck is this? But I recognized some of the authors and the books that they had written that they were going to be speaking at this event. And at the time, I had not heard of Vern Harnish or Gazelles, or, you know, that was my first exposure. I saw, hey, here's a collection of interesting people that I want to hear from. So I went out to Las Vegas for the Gazelles Growth Summit. That would have been in 2007, I guess. And it opened my eyes to the concept of coaching. And we hired a coach in 2008. And we brought him in, and it was a bit of an eye-opener. And I had never been one to really open up to outside coaches. Has just been something that I'd always just done it myself. And I'm a college dropout, but, you know, I always found a way and, you know, would find the answer myself. I wasn't one to divert to consultants who could tell me how to do anything. And the example that opened my eyes to being open to a coach was the, and kind of strange now to bring up Tiger Woods and something like that. But here's the best golfer in the world, and he's jumping from one coach to another to help him be better. And his coach isn't going to be better at him at what he does, but it's somebody who can look and see what he's doing and be able to explain to him what he's doing, or to take him in the direction that he feels he needs to go. It's still Tiger making the decisions, but it's a third party that's helping him do what he needs to do. So we brought in a coach. I've met your coach at one of the Maverick events with
Cameron Harold.
Cameron, who's been fantastic. But we brought him in, and we started going through essentially the Rockefeller habits from Vern Harnish's group. And one of those elements was the core values. And we started articulating those things that we've been living, but they hadn't been articulated. And once you articulate them and you start telling the stories, and it starts coming to life, and people recognize that, oh, this is how we go about doing things. And it makes me excited when I hear someone saying, referencing our core values when they're making decisions.
Yeah.
And we know that it's just part of how we do business. You can walk up to any one of our employees and ask them what our core values are, and they're going to be able to tell you. And it's not just the words. They probably know a story for each one of them.
Yeah, the stories are definitely what make it stick. And are the stories told in a is it done every week in a meeting, or is it a any time that they come up, or how's your process for disseminating?
You know, we have From a leadership team point of view, we'll address it on a quarterly basis, make sure that, you know, are there any new stories, anything interesting that's gone along, what, basically adding them to the repertoire of stories that we can use. And the most effective way to use these stories is in the moment. You know, when something comes up about, you know, whatever the situation may be, we have this repertoire of stories that we can draw upon, and it's not, okay, well, let me go read this to you off of our wiki. We know these things. I mean, it's not when you called today, or when I called in today, I had no idea I was going to be telling the story about, you know, respect,
yeah,
and, you know, sending off. But any one of our core values, depending on what the situation, we just draw upon the stories that we've got available. And it's not just, oh, here's a fable. These are real examples. This is what really happened.
Yep.